Okay, what did you? Yeah, what did you do to find that? Did you just say Champagne Events or?
No, I just thought it would be it. The weekend for State Wrestling,
and it's was. Always here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that going to be at the State Farm Center?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, it used to be Assembly Hall. If you give enough money, they'll call it the whatever you want to call it.
All right. So did that name change just happen this year, or has it been a while?
About a year.
Okay.
It's been a little more than a year.
And are they done with those renovations?
No, but it's usable now for games and stuff, but there's still quite a bit to do. It looks fine. I think it's 6.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Call the meeting to order.
Anderson.
Here.
Banks. Colbert.
Present.
Hodson.
Present.
Palinkas.
Here.
Sutton. And Emmanuel.
Here. Okay. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda? That's a little.
Second.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. We've got on the agenda, we'll make one change to the agenda. We've got the closed session on there, we're gonna delete that.
Do you need another motion?
Probably do.
Yeah, I make a motion that the agenda as revised be approved.
Second.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Do I have a motion on approval of the minutes?
I move to approve the minutes.
Second.
All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, this will be the time for public participation. Do we have public participation?
Yes.
Good.
Welcome. Mary Schultz. Okay, what I have written down for tonight is what progress is being made to provide hot food to residents? What progress is being made to provide hot food to residents? I read that you guys are looking into the steam tables in the report, but I'd like to hear more about that. And I was wondering, I don't know whose role it might possibly be, but maybe the CMAs or dietary could provide us with some temps next month. I'd be very curious what the temperature of food is, not for the first person who gets a plate, but for mid-dining room, or even worse, for the people who get a tray taken to their room. I want to know what those temps are on that food, and I don't know if we've ever discussed that. My second question is, what progress has been made to find out the reasons behind our turnover rate? I know we discussed that some last month, and the HR person is supposed to tell us, but you know, you guys talked about polling departed employees months ago, and I would like to hear how those results ended up. And I think my last question is, I did not understand, so I'm hoping you guys can explain it when you get to this part. Issue number 1, page 8, the first bullet. I'm confused by either it's phrased wrong or the math is wrong, because I just don't understand what it means. It says the retention rate for CNAs fell in December due to the 12 December hires, which has increased the number of CNAs. And the way I read that, the turnover rate might have fallen, but the retention rate should have gone up if you have a bigger denominator. So when you guys get to that, I'm not sure if that's just maybe a change in phrase that I don't understand, or if the math, I don't understand it, but can you try to explain that when we get to it? And that's all mine.
Thank you. Any other public participation? Yeah.
I do. For the record, Patsy Petrie. I have a couple of things that I have shared with Karen and Scott, but I do want on the record so the board knows this is available to be taken advantage of. And I feel very disappointed myself that I didn't put this together many months ago. It came out at the Local Food Policy Council meeting last week, and there are two members of that council who are absolute the most knowledgeable people and experts in food service, dining service, layout, everything like this. And I mentioned it to them as we were brainstorming on totally disconnected topics, if they would ever be willing just to come over to the nursing home and observe a meal or a couple of meals. One is Rebecca Roach, who teaches nutrition in the College of ACES over at the university. And the other is Chris Hennings, who is Assistant Director of Food Services and Housing over at the university. And it's a shame not to capture their expertise to help us over here. They made some very quick suggestions during the conversation, which I won't take time to share with. The other part of the conversation with Rebecca Roach is that she mentioned, and Chris mentioned, how the dietetic students work in dining services at the university as part of their course pattern. And I said, they said they're also in the hospitals. And I said, well, what about the county nursing home? And it was sort of like, oh, why aren't we doing that? So I'm hoping that there will be some follow-up and conversation on both aspects. Can both of them help you all figure out how to improve food, delivery of food, steam tables, any of those aspects that I hear you talk about, and then capture the possibility of having the dietetic students have a time during their coursework to be here. And then the last thing, due to another communication I had from a daughter of a resident here, and that is that individual, that mother has been here 2 to 3 years, and the daughter had no idea about the family council. So my question to you all, which I hope somebody will ask for information about, is how is the meeting of the family council advertised, or that word gets out to family members so they at least know about it and might have a choice to come and attend? Thank you.
Thank you. Other public participation?
I just had a couple of points. One being that the west dining room is painted and no longer splotchy white, and that's greatly appreciated. It looks so much nicer now, like a finished dining room. The other was that we seem to be short from CNAs again. We were doing so well for a while, at least on Unit 1. I don't know about the other units. I'm a resident of Unit 1. Richard right there. I wouldn't say my name. So that's kind of disturbing. The wait times for help are increasing again, which is a sad note, because we were doing so well for a time. I'm not sure what the cause of that is. I know a lot of CNAs have opted for the 12-hour shift, and so I don't know that has achieved the desired end yet. In any case, those were a couple of the comments I had. And in terms of warm meals, I've had just a couple times a warm plate. But again, they've reversed the service so that my unit is served last now. I don't expect to get warm meals in the near future, because I think the hot plates are not being serviced, getting warmed up properly by the time I get warm meals. So, in any case, those are my comments. I'd like to thank the members of the county board for volunteering for this service. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your comments. Other comments? Okay. Thanks very much. Are there other communications? There's a couple things here. We have the minutes from the family meeting, and Mary, you were there. Is there anything either you or Karen want to highlight?
I think our new dietitian was introduced at that meeting. We had some new attendees that have not been to the meeting before. It was nice to see.
It was a fairly positive, we had pretty positive feedback that particular meeting.
Yeah, that particular night you had some positives about dietary.
Yeah, apparently the food service improved, and it sounds like maybe things have slid back a little bit since, but that night that we had positive comments about the food service.
And I see a support group that started January 21st.
Right, a dementia caregiver support group through the Adult Day Care. And we also talked about our electronic medical record transition, because there had been some questions about the kiosk and that kind of thing. So
if anybody's not aware of the support group, it meets the third Thursday.
And it is posted throughout the facility. We've actually sent out direct mailers to all the families.
I certainly haven't seen anything posted.
It's all throughout the facility. I've seen them on the doors to go outside.
So it's the third Thursday of every month at 10 a.m.?
No, 6 p.m.
Oh. Okay.
That's the support group.
That's the date.
Of the support group. But she's the family council. Are you not?
Oh, no. Support
group. Oh, sorry. No. Yeah, that's new. It just kicked off.
So but it is at 10 a.m. or is it?
It's at 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, Amber talked about that in the family meeting.
Yeah, I just haven't seen it advertised, and I had to leave the family meeting early. And I know it's not public comment, but I'm telling this to you guys so nobody gets misled. You know, yes, we have maybe two new people there. I don't consider that a wave of new participation. And along with some positives, because Tim, the new kitchen guy, was there, and the new dietitian was there, but there were negatives like, how are we out of brown sugar? How are we out of jelly? How can we run? Why do we serve toast if we know we're out of jelly? I mean, I don't know. I don't get to see those minutes because I'm not a power of attorney, so I don't get those emailed to me. And I don't really care because I know what happened at the meeting, but I just don't want you guys to be misled that it was overwhelmingly positive, because I certainly, you know, there were some new people asking questions. That's what it was, two new people.
Okay, so I'm going to, because I know I'm going to get yelled at for having interaction. So, it would be helpful for those who are involved from public participation. It'd be great to have your comments on the family meeting too, during the public participation. So I know we're supposed to be having a board meeting. I know I'm not supposed to be engaging, but I don't want to.
Yeah, but Kathy, we do have to pick our battles.
Right. Right.
The three most important points to me.
Okay. Also, in terms of communication, we've got where I work, in each meeting that we have what we call mission moments, and work with a little hospital in Waseca, and they have what they call the good news story. And not to sugarcoat anything, because we're going to talk about plenty of issues and what we need to do with them, but want to make sure that we're sharing good news as well. So we've got a thank you from
a daughter.
And Karen, I think it was addressed to you, right? So would you share it?
Her father's been here a few weeks, but she just wanted to pay her respects and admiration to all the facilities. She has worked in long-term care in other places, and she just wanted to make sure that the staff were acknowledged. She describes it as very sincere admiration for all, and special mention to the CNAs who follow through on with utmost dedication to the profession. Direct caregiving requires very special gifts of understanding, savvy, responding to residents' needs. So I think as a person who's worked in the industry and now someone who has a father here at the facility, it was nice to get a note about the quality of the care. Nice,
and we'll
pass that along to the staff that work with her
father. Okay. And for anybody who did not see it, there is a report you may even talk about, but there's a report in the board packet from the new Director of Human Resources. We asked at the last board meeting to get a report from that person and a presentation. So what she's brought, what she put in the board packet is sort of her first report. It stresses some of the things, you know, we said, what are you going to focus on first? And she's stressed some of those. Some of them are technical things like speeding up payroll, point tracking, the notification, the mechanics of HR. The priorities she identified was creating a more positive recognition program and improving communication between management and staff and filling management, particularly nurse management positions, and working through a little bit of the scheduling. So those I saw, and actually first goal was to expand the recruiting efforts. So addressing some of the comments around CNAs, some of our concerns that get raised in here about filling nurse manager positions, and she sees that as one, I think, first priority too, as I read it. So we've asked her to come back at the March board meeting and do a presentation, but we wanted to get, when she has new eyes, sort of here's her first impression, what she thinks she needs to work on. Do you want to say anything else about that?
Side note is that she had a prior speaking engagement in Chicago for today, and that's the reason why she's not here. So instead of waiting to provide this initial report in March, we thought we could just include it, but we will have her here next month.
Yeah, good. We really had agreed that she would present in March, but it's good to get first impressions.
Okay, a question about her report, or maybe I just missed it, but we had talked previously about having the Human Resources Director due to exit interview questionnaires, and I don't think she mentioned that.
That is something she's been working on. She's developed in previous work lives some electronic that you could email them and let them respond to. So that is something she's definitely got on her radar.
Thank you. Yeah, good. That's a really good question because that came up last
month. We did talk about that, yeah.
You're right. Okay, so, and actually, just to simplify this, for those of you who aren't looking at it, she says, I see our two biggest hurdles at the moment as recruiting and retention, and of course, those feed on each other, and it's around nurses and CNAs, how we keep them, why they're leaving, how do we recruit more, how do we retain them. So, okay. All right, let's go through the, yes.
As another communication, I think maybe we should introduce our new board member, Mr. Aaron Sutton,
my
is here this evening.
For being late.
good idea, thanks. Would you come give us a little bit of, would you introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, my name is Ed Sutton, and I retired about 2 years ago from the university where I taught astronomy, and over the past 2 to 3, 4 years, I've been taking care of my wife at home until she passed this past May. So I had a great deal of hands-on experience with a lot of what goes on here. And I just felt that this would be a good way to give back some of that to the community. So I hope I can be helpful.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Let's just really quick, because this is your first. Okay, so could we just introduce ourselves as well? Could you start?
Yes, I'm Lorraine Colward, and I'm on the Champaign County Board.
Hi, I'm Bob Palinkas from the University.
Jack Anderson of the County Board.
Sam Banks, Donmore Boys and Girls Club.
I'm Kathy Manuel.
Scott Gimo with the Management Company, National Friends Associates.
Karen Nocke, we've met. I'm Mary Hodson. I'm retired, but I am the president of the Nursing Home Auxiliary.
Great. Welcome. Thanks, Deb. Okay. All right. So, Karen, would you go through some of the go through the issues and update on them? And I think it would be nice open positions, and you've got a new format for.
Right. On page 5 is the current open positions. The graph did not include. There was a suggestion to add how long positions have been vacant, and that's a separate sheet that I handed out. Again, our management positions have been from the RN shift supervisor on nights through our top four. Their nursing management positions are the ones that we've struggled to recruit to, as well as the care plan coordinator. We added a position last year that we have not been successful in recruiting for yet. The dementia coordinator has been offered, but we still have the rehab unit two manager went vacant in November of last year. The RN night shift supervisor is vacant, and the care plan, the additional care plan coordinator position are vacant. We have also added some positions in activities this year, and we've been successful in hiring those. We did have a cook position go vacant recently that we're actively looking at. Transportation is a new position in January this year. We're interviewing the maintenance. The position went vacant in November, and we've actually hired that position as well. And then the maintenance manager went vacant in January. And we have had several interviews for that position as well, and hope to offer that soon. The team leaders, I don't really have any data on those. Obviously, we continue to recruit CNAs. Our position, we've been able to hire quite a few in the month of January.
Those positions are basically, if you take a look at this chart now, it's in FTEs. So the 14 and a half that you see for CNAs is 14 and a half FTE positions that are open, and all the others are full-time equivalent positions.
So I have a couple of questions. It does look like there's a huge challenge in recruiting and filling CNA positions. If you look at the trend from January to February, virtually there was no progress. And then I guess the issue was raised from the public about our reporting and the denominator. Is there, in one of the other reports, is there any a way of sort of reconciling some of that?
Yeah, so actually I'd say that we're making pretty good progress over the last two or three months. So we've gone from 18.6 positions open to 14 and a half between January and February, and again
in the CNAs.
So we had, if you take a look on page 7, you can see that the CNA. So between December and January, we went from 18.6 open positions to 12.5. So actually, that number should be 12.5, not 14.5, and that's my error. But the 12.5 on page 7 open positions is correct. So because we hired 12 new CNAs in December, we only had one separation, and in January, I believe we had hired, over 10,
11,
and we had two separations in January. So, and again, in terms of the narrative where I stated that the retention rates for CNA fell, so the retention rate is defined as the number of employees that have been at the facility for 1 year or more. So let's say we had 10 employees that were out of 20 that were here for 1 year or more. If we hired 10 more employees, the denominator would increase the next month to 30. And so that would actually reduce the retention rate. So what you see on page 6 on our retention rate between November and December decreased across the board. And that's because of the increase in hires, CNA hires that we've seen, but the numerator that calculates the retention rate hadn't changed because the number of employees that have been employed for 1 year or more pretty much didn't change from last month to this month. But the total number of employees in the building did go up because we hired 10 plus more CNAs plus other staff members. So that would then decrease the retention rate, and also see a slight, we're starting to see a decrease in our turnover rates in all categories, including CNAs, because we've been able to hire more CNAs in the month of December compared to November. And anticipate when we see the statistics for January, we probably should see a further decline in the retention rate plus a decline in the turnover rate. So it's not that we've decreased the number of employees who have working here for 1 year or more, it's changing the denominator. Does that make sense?
Are you not saying that the denominator is the number of employees who have worked here 1 year or more?
No.
Okay.
The numerator is the number of employees that have worked here 1 year or more. The denominator is the current number of employees.
Okay. So as you have more employees, that's going to change
right.
The vacancy.
Yes.
So to kind of address that, which is, comes up on page 8 to it, the retention rate would go down as the number of overall employees goes up if
yes.
The number of people who have been here for a year or more stays
does
the
not
same.
Change. Right.
And I they're actually, that we don't have a long way to go, but looking at page 7, the number of CNA open positions is the least it's been for the last 12 months by nearly half. So,
and again, the turnover rates. So I calculate. So our goal is to get our turnover rate of 45%. So over a 12-month period, that would mean we need to average three or four separations a month. So if we can stay below three or four, we can hit that turnover rate. So again, what we've been doing is a rolling 12-month turnover rate. So in December, what we calculated in December, it's taken January through December turnovers divided by the number of CNAs. For example, at the end of December. So it's going to take time for us to reduce our turnover rate. So, if we, let's say, for argument's sake, that we remain at two separations a month, if we have that in February, our turnover rate will decrease, but it's going to take time for that rate to decrease over time. The other way that I used to do it with our other facilities is if we start in January fresh and we had one turnover in January, I would annualize it and say, okay, annualize it to assume that we're going to have 12 over a 12-month period. Well, that artificially probably keeps the number low, but it's based on a 1 month sample. So I felt that using a 12-month rolling turnover rate gives us a better statistic. But again, it will take time if we can maintain this level of turnover to see the turnover rate decrease. So I think you take a look at the overall turnover rate, but also take a look at the trends and separations. And at least, over the last couple of months, we're seeing some positive improvements or decreases in our separations, but it remains to be seen if we can maintain that. So between that and hopefully, the things that Amanda's going to start working with us on in terms of recruitment and retention and turnover, plus all the things that we have been doing, hopefully we can maintain that level of turnover over a prolonged period of time. But again, only time will tell.
So I have just one follow-up, I guess, and Karen, maybe you could help with this. I'm buying the statistics. I'm okay with that. And I'm just wondering about the phenomena, because we heard from the public that the view inside of the people who live here might be a little different, that some are feeling like there's not enough, there's less than there were. Why would our numbers look better, but our clients, our residents, say, I'm not getting much help?
We base our staffing on acuity. So as unit population changes, as their acuity on the unit changes, I mean, that can fluctuate day to day. So nursing works with the scheduler to determine those levels daily. We have pulled them back a little bit because we've had one unit that's had like six people in the hospital, but their acuity numbers show it higher. So we have...
So you're going to have to, you're reshuffling, so to speak,
right.
According to the acuity. So you might have more numbers, but a certain one, some place that had to sort of donate CNAs to a more acute unit would feel a little bit
but still meeting
shorted.
Standards
right.
and what we feel
okay.
is adequate staffing. Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Karen, you had mentioned on team leaders that would be long-term care, rehabilitative, and dementia. You didn't have any data. That was what you said.
Right.
As to the date of when that position was
when
first opened.
Right.
Well, okay. And so next month it will still be blank, or will you be able to get that data?
I would have to figure out how I could get that data.
Do you save your postings?
We could look at that for a change in status, but I don't know how easy that is to get out of Kronos. But
why don't you explain to us as to why it's difficult for these positions to...
From the perspective, the codes, I don't have easy access to the codes. I would depend on IT over at county to...
Code meaning a specific
each
position.
Team, right, yeah. Exactly.
I'm not so interested in that.
But that's where I would get those dates.
I mean, I could go back in the retained days. I guess I could go back to the last year or so and see if it's ever moved. I mean, that would give me an indication. If it's always six over the last year, then we've never made headway. Or maybe it was Delora, then it became seven, but it tells me...
Well, it's been an ongoing issue in trying to make these positions attractive for CNAs to take it. And some of it has to do with, a lot of it has to do with pay. Making it attractive enough for these positions, which is added responsibility that is something economically worthwhile.
That's my question is, are the positions necessary? Are they required? I'm not saying from your perspective,
oh,
but
sorry,
is there...
So it's not an open position in terms of that we're short of CNAs taking care of residents. It's a position that we've identified that would be helpful if we could attract a CNA who's got some of our better skilled CNAs that can take on additional responsibilities to help out.
Direct with workflow,
right.
Things that need to be done.
But are those the CNA team leaders? Or are you talking about the unit managers?
The team leaders.
Oh, team leaders.
Yeah, so I thought you were asking about the unit managers.
So, not the same position, but so, for example, the preceptor program that we have, you know, do we, you know, talking this up, kind of on top of that, you know, do we merge that into the team leader so that the preceptors become a team leader because they're acting in a larger capacity or a more responsible capacity with the CNA staff? So
when I look at the numbers here on, say, page 7, and I'm looking at CNA open positions, are those six in there? Of the 12.5, or should that be 18.5?
No, they would be included in
12.5.
Right. Yeah. So if we have 12.5 open positions, we would like to have six of those positions as a team leader. So it's not in addition.
I see.
Well, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shut up. Okay. You guys work here? How long have they been open?
Oh, it's as long as I can remember.
Okay.
15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And some of them change their status from full-time and part-time, and then they lose that designation. I mean, they still may be on staff, but because they're not working full-time to meet the requirements, they're not fulfilling that role anymore.
I had a question about some of these positions, like your night supervisor, then do you designate an acting night supervisor every night?
Right.
And then does that person gets acting pay?
Right.
And so their pay has to be recalculated every night, depending on who's the acting supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't get one person to take it acting.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that, again, to reiterate, the key positions that we really want to get filled are the unit manager positions for the
dementia rehab in Union City. So, you know, that's, you know, it was mentioned in Amanda's report, and something that we are actively having discussions about what can we do to fill those management positions, because it is, by having those positions open, it is stretching our nurse managers thin in terms of fulfilling all their responsibilities. They need that support with those unit managers. And again, as Amanda put in her report, it also provides additional supervision or go-to people for the staff on the unit. So it's just, and also they can also help address care issues on an ongoing basis also that are trying to be met by the administration and by nursing management. So again, you know, we would prefer to have RNs in those positions, but like what we did with the unit manager for 1-3, we used, successfully recruited a social services. Carol, who has a social services background, to fill that position. So, but for, especially for the rehab unit on unit 4, that position without question has to be clinically based, because we're taking care of the Medicare is coming from the hospital, so it would be good to find an RN in that position.
And honestly, that was the issue that we identified now a year ago as a key issue, was the, you know, the number of open positions, the length of time the positions are open, and particularly the nurse manager positions being open. So those are ones that got to get fixed 12 months ago. Okay.
On page 8, it is talked about, we did have 11 hires, 9 of those were full time, and of those, 5 for the weekend only. So dietary has been fully staffed in January. And there wasn't, there was a recalculation in the 5-star, but the staffing number for us did not change.
Or for any of the other facilities in the area.
That's a one-time recalculation based on an annual survey. So.
And I know we've said this, but when you look on page 10, because, you know, our home gets more scrutiny, public scrutiny, because we're a public facility than any other. It's worth noting that on the adjusted hours per resident day, we have the highest hours, staffed hours per resident day of any of the facilities that we're looking at in Champaign. So,
and it's above the Illinois average as well.
Yeah, and it is above the Illinois average. A little bit of work that needs to be done on our end. We're still not as high as we'd like to be there. And we just talked about that with unit manager positions, but higher than the state average and higher than anybody except Kirkland in the CNAs. But for our sort of acuity, for lack of a better word, the adjusted hours per resident day is the highest. So again, it's just what I think you were saying, Dr. Blinkis. You know, you got to look at the statistics. You also need to hear what residents and family members are saying, and how does it jive or not jive, or what's the reason behind the discrepancy.
On page 11, it talks about our agency use. It's down in December and January. February, we expect to end up around 78,000. That's attributable to, I think, our hires. And moving on to issue 2, the strategic objectives. The training, the IV, we just finished a class in January, and we will be continuing to train on those as we're rolling data. We keep track of the staff that are on board, and we make sure that they finish these training competencies. We've had a lot of effort and time put into our EHR, our electronic medical record transition, so that has now been accomplished. There was a lot of training around that we wanted our staff to participate in, so our attention will be turned towards training. I know our IPMG, our risk management group, has been here recently to do some education around documentation. And the Carl Collaborative Intelligent also has a collaborative that they're working on educational components around skills, so that's something we'll be participating in as well as we move forward. On page 13, the quality of care, our quality measure went up to the 5-star rating in this month. That's a good thing. Staffing more 4 out of 5 compared to the rest of the facilities that we continue to look at. They're between 2 and 3 stars. And on page 15, the Pinnacle satisfaction. There were 15 surveys conducted in December, and we've had trouble getting those 15 done. But we had a lot of areas that trended up. The actual quality of the food trended up. Several areas. We know laundry, we continue to struggle with laundry, and we are working with laundry. In January, we had 125 pieces of clothing that came down that had no indication of who they were, so they weren't marked. So we know that's an area that we need to work on. Communication, we know, affects a lot of things, responsiveness to problems, and that's something we want to work with our staff and how they communicate with families, with residents, to try and resolve issues as quickly as possible at the lowest level as possible. So we're looking at what we can do to train on those specific things, customer service, because we feel that would have a big impact on a lot of these areas. And dining, we know that, and quality of food, I'll talk more about that when we actually get to our dining. But we have some work groups around dining, and with the CNAs and dietary staff, that they've been working on ideas on how to improve and streamline processes. And I actually have reached out. Patsy had provided some information, and they provided us someone who was interested in coming for a fee to look at the Rebecca Roach, that group, to actually look at workflow. So we're in the beginnings of discussing that. And we've also reached out about the opportunity for interns, and she passed that along as well. So so communication, responsiveness to problems for laundry service, we know, or things we want to focus on. Obviously dining. And we have a work group going around the laundry issues as well. The Pinnacle scores are there for December. Issue 3 is the medical management. Carl has been successful in recruiting an additional nurse practitioner that we don't have a start date yet, but we will have 2 full-time and 1 part-time going forward. Right now they're covering with the whole group, so we have multiple nurse practitioners, 1 full-time, the rest part-time. So we don't have a start date yet. They have hired. So that's positive to get some consistency for staff. The pulmonary clinic, we're finishing up that contract with Dr. Sheik. Hopefully March, but I would say a safe date to project would be April 1st, just because we want to make sure in that contract we get everything done. He's eager to get started. Outpatient rehab, we continue to get some referrals, not to the level we'd like to see that grow. We're working with HealthPro on marketing efforts around that. We continue to get most of our referrals out of our adult daycare and our rehab to home. A lot of our clients are receiving services in the home versus going out, but we're working with HealthPro to see what we can do as far as marketing. We have let all of our referral sources know we have it and it's here and available.
Are you talking about the new unit or are you talking about the...
The outpatient.
The outpatient.
But the new unit would be a feeder to this outpatient. So if they were going, you know, somewhere in the community to a outpatient therapy, they could actually come back here.
You mean the new Medicare unit would be a feeder, is that what you're
saying?
Right, yeah, yes.
Yeah, when they,
because you've got short-stay patients,
right.
Yeah. Right.
So, and HealthPro is our therapy company,
right.
So...
Sorry.
If you want to reach out to them again to see if, what other marketing opportunities that we should be doing.
We think we have some success stories that we could double
right.
And some metrics we could get out to providers. I know that was something, when we did our open house, the providers that did come through thought that was a good thing. So.
Yeah. What is our adult daycare census?
It varies between 20 and 25.
So again,
we're
that,
picking up a lot of
right.
referrals with the other adult daycare here in town is kind of suffering from the financial and they quit taking admissions and they've actually reduced hours. So we've had several referrals coming
so
over.
Our adult daycare census actually has gone up
fairly
significant because we have been averaging, I think historically, you know, 11 or 12 over the last couple of years, it's been more 14 or 15. So getting into the 20s is a significant increase. So, but fortunately, it's because we're the only nursing home that has adult daycare. The only other adult daycare is a standalone.
Right, right.
But they are facing budget cuts because of the state issues. So, but also, this is something I kind of forgot about. Because the payer source is not the same as our inpatient Medicaid, we are also not receiving payments from the state for our adult daycare program. I mean, we're talking probably about 30,000 since July 1st. But so we are in the same position, but obviously we've got additional revenue sources at this point that allows us to not have to make any changes to adult daycare. But I know that's something that I had forgotten to mention. It's just been off of my radar screen. We've got this adult daycare program, but it is a separate Medicaid funding system, and it's not part of the consent decrees that is allowing us to be paid on the inpatient side.
Page 29, it talks about our 30-day readmission. We had two out of six Medicare that we admitted to the hospital, so a 33% readmission rate. Not where we'd like for it to be.
And are you working with both hospitals on any protocols or anything to reduce that?
We've primarily been working with Carl on a collaborative, which they kind of turned over to Health Alliance on readmission and handoffs between.
And that's something with Dr. Sheep that we're going to be working on from our COPD pulmonary rehab standpoint, to put together those protocols from that standpoint. So,
clinical, we had 6 out of 16. The CMS, I've mentioned, we went from the 4 to 5 star. That was the only change in our 5 star rating for the update in the December. So as far as that data and looking at that, we've been digging into our data, historical data. So it's from September is what's affecting our 5 star now. So looking at, did we code things correctly? If someone's on, has an ADL decline, are they on hospice? Because that should exclude them. Are we capturing not only hospice, but 6 months or less to live? Those things all have to be checked. And to make sure that we're coding correctly. And we're finding that we could have some improvements in some of those areas. So we're looking, it's not going to improve right away, but moving forward, because we're compared against old data, it should have an effect in making sure we're coding everything correctly.
Karen?
Uh-huh.
You were talking about the readmission rate. You mentioned
33%. So two.
For what, January?
January, yes. December, we had none.
So the six Medicare patients, they had two.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
Traditional Medicare.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
it doesn't count for Medicare.
You might want to fix the number on the top of that box for January 15. 2 of 15 is not 36.
Yeah, January of 16 is at the bottom of the graph.
I know.
Yeah, but
no,
he just
the numbers,
said,
you've got the wrong calculation.
Yeah.
0.13. I have the wrong calculation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that should be 13.3. Hmm. Thanks, Jack.
Oh, that's fine. I was just trying to understand how this works. I got it now.
Page 31 has a addressing resident family concerns, a summary of the procedures that we've talked about historically. And
what else summarizing here is that, you know, we've tried to come up with every option to allow the residents and the families to communicate their concerns to us. And every concern that we do receive gets followed up on, every single one of them, including, you know, the Pinnacle surveys, because, again, those are not anonymous surveys. And so any issues with those residents or families, we will investigate and follow up with them. And all the follow-ups will get to Karen's desk, and she will do a final follow-up to see if everything's been taken care of. So, but those are only the ones that are identified. So again, we've seen with the Pinnacle surveys that in those cases, on many occasions, that's the first time that we've heard of those concerns from those family members. So, you know, again, with the family council meeting and resident council, if there's, we'll take any other suggestions in terms of being more available or other options that we could be providing to provide easier feedback to the facility. So, you know, the one of the things I asked, you know, could we have, you know, a specific email to the facility on our website? So I think that's something that did we just add that?
Everybody's email's been added.
Okay.
Yeah. With a contact for each department.
I have to think to some degree. I've been thinking about this communication problem. And there are mechanisms. Certainly these are traditional mechanisms. And then I reflect on the population here, or the clients. And I think they're not always going to want to voice beyond their caretaker. They'll make their request, and if the caretaker's not responsive, then maybe they don't want to push it further, and, you know, for a variety of beliefs and thoughts that they may have, they just don't want to push it further, and you don't hear about it until their loved one hears about it, because they'll step up for them. I don't know how you fix that. I mean, all things being equal, you've got employees who do great work, all of them. And then there's exceptions who don't. They're not as responsive as they should be. And then maybe those are the complaints you're hearing. I don't know. I mean, there's a variety of issues that go into that, I understand. Personalities and things.
Right. And we've had families voice that, you know, nobody wants to say anything because we're afraid that, you know, we'll get back to the caregiver and then there may be retaliation or you're not able to take care of my mom or your father, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
Yeah, so I don't know, you know, again, off the top of my head, you know, could we do periodic random interviews or with residents, something like that, maybe a possibility, but yeah, so those that we don't know about and they're reluctant to voice, yeah, we would like to be able to catch those, so, yeah, I'm not sure.
Mean, there is mechanisms as far as like activities and social service that interview, I mean, looking for issues like that. That, you know, you will get some, but not all of them. Just in their typical assessment you know, quarterly. They have the opportunity to respond about regarding their care plan or during their care plan also, and that's quarterly also. But it's those day-to-day, we think we're missing.
Sure. Those day-to-days are what it's really kind of all about, because it's about the quality of daily life.
Mm-hmm.
It's the small things.
Right, and maybe something that a staff member may think was insignificant or overlooked, but for the resident or the family, it may have been a much more important issue.
I've asked her three times.
Right.
You know, over the last month. Still. You know, so that, yeah.
Is that a part of accounted for in part as well, and with the quality assurance type mechanisms that you have, that trying to address that point of
the day-to-day communication.
Day-to-day communication.
I mean, we quantify the ones that we get into the system currently, but I think it's, you know, a bigger picture. When we talk about communication, we need to take a look at and do a better job training our staff to be responsive. So some customer service and good communication kinds of, which is something that Amanda and I have been talking about, how do we accomplish that? So I think she'll have some ideas as we move forward.
So. I would hope to some degree with the additional staff, CNA staff, that they'll have the time to give the care that, you know, anyone would expect.
Well, in terms of having more of our own CNAs, less agency, then that improves the continuity of care, and so those staff members will be obviously more in tune with our residents and pick up on subtle changes, issues, whatever. You'll know.
But I think all of our staff, you know, housekeeping spends a lot of time, the beautician spends a lot of time. I mean, we do get concerns through those other avenues as well when we follow up on.
That's it. Maybe we need to get the beautician to see everyone. You know, people like to talk to their barber and beautician, right?
Maybe you need a bartender.
Well, I don't know about that.
It would be appreciated.
Yeah. But I think the segue then is, you know, the other potential tool is with us going to electronic medical records. I mean, I cannot underemphasize how much I think that's going to improve the care that we're given. I was just... with this new matrix care that we have, you know, I'm trying to learn as much as I can about different bells and whistles to make sure that we're taking advantage of everything that we have. So, you know, I was talking with the director of nursing at Monroe County. And they've had the EHR for a few years now, and you know, in a nutshell, it helps prevent things from falling between the cracks in terms of care issues. But I also want to see if it's something that's going to be able to improve communication between shifts. My DON is telling me that, you know, because she's used it before she came here, and it really helps them supervise and monitor what's going on with the residents on almost on a daily basis, not on a shift basis. But the DON in Monroe County said, you know, that their surveys have gotten better because the overall quality of care, because they're catching things that are falling between the cracks. And I was probably a little bit worried about the change to electronic records because it's a big change for the staff. But I think the feedback that I've gotten so far is that, survey is not scientific, it's just asking a handful of staff members walking down the hallways. But every single one of them, and I'm talking about less than a handful or a handful, you know, have said, no, this has been really good. You know, no one has said, you know, I hate this thing, I don't like the kiosks and it's hard to use, et cetera, because, you know, I had that experience at the Cal, and we put in kiosks to help with ADLs, and the CNAs there absolutely hated it. So, you know, I was kind of jaded to a certain extent from that experience, but so far, so good. And you can tell me that I'm not saying the right stuff, but so far I've been hearing nothing but good things about it. Now, that being said, there have been problems with implementation, but I would characterize this as nothing significant. But I think overall, these first few weeks have been, you know, much smoother than I had anticipated it would go on. Kathy may say otherwise, but I think I'm very optimistic that we're going to be able to see improvements overall with the electronic health records. And then, you know, there's also financial benefits in having better documentation that will hopefully see increases in our overall Medicaid rate. So if we face, like I think we're going to be eventually facing a Medicaid cut, it will be somewhat minimized by hopefully seeing our base Medicaid rate increasing over the next few months, next year or so. And again, and I want to make sure I say a lot of thanks goes to Kathy Vanderslice and the nursing management staff for the positive implementation, because they have put in a significant amount of hours in getting ready for the implementation. And I can't even just begin to scratch the surface on how much work is necessary with getting the system set up, getting all the information into the system, but also trying to get the staff as trained as possible before we implement. We actually did delay it for a week or two, but again, knock on wood, it's going pretty smoothly.
Okay, so we're
going to
go on to food service. There's an area we don't need to ask for problems. We know that's one where we've got to address.
So it's all about hot.
Well,
hot. How can we do that?
And I know that's one thing we've been seeing what we have with our physical plant, what we could do. The kitchenette areas, could those be reconfigured to have a steam table safely, because there's doors that would protect? So we're looking at the options around those. We would have to come up with a plan that would be approved by public health. We've thrown around some ideas about how we can do that. There are stationary steam tables that might be able to be incorporated into those areas. There's a lot more room there. We would have to remove some shelving, reconfigure, but thinking if we bulked our food down in a hot cart that we could serve from a steam table, with some thoughts of maybe opening a service window so that we could keep the door shut so the residents wouldn't be exposed to the steam table. So I know Dana from County Facility Maintenance, he and I walked through those spaces to see if he had any concerns for electrical or plumbing. He didn't see anything that was obvious. He feels like, you know, we could proceed with this plan if we can come up with something that we feel like would work. So we're looking at pricing out some equipment. We'd like to find someone to help design workflow. I haven't identified a person yet. We have some feelers out.
This way you mean design workflow?
A kitchen.
Where you would put what within that kitchenette. Because we're going to have to remove some shelving. How we would do that. We'd like to see that opened up for service across a service, incorporating hand sinks, make sure everything is up to public health code.
And we have ice machine in each of the kitchenettes and other, you know, drink dispensers, coffee machine things. So we want to take a look at all that to make sure that we, if we're going to do this, we want to make sure it's configured
right
correctly. So.
Did I understand that you once had steam tables?
Within the dining room, they just sat out in the open.
Yeah, so they were portable, on-wheel steam tables that were just sitting out in the middle.
Right.
Yeah.
And so
we've actually outgrown, I mean, where they actually sat, we have resident tables now. Those dining rooms are too full for even to build a wall where they previously sat.
Yeah, I was out last week, and I was just thinking about this issue, and it was kind of, I was wondering what was the big safety issue, because don't we serve the plates to, we take the plates to the residents, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they actually aren't, they won't actually be coming near the steam tables if they are.
But they sit out where they wheeled by them, they could grab into them. I mean, they were exposed, those hot areas.
Yeah. So because the steam table is not behind a locked door or somewhere where the residents can't get to it. Again, back in 2013, the surveyors started tagging facilities just for the possibility of having a steam table out in the open, even though they weren't any incidents, just that there was the risk that a resident could go up to the steam table while it was still hot and burn themselves. So
I imagine that's probably happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the concern was is that there were facilities in Illinois decided by our surveyors just for the risk, and they were being tagged in immediate jeopardy, which is a very significant scope and severity. So that's the reason why we removed the steam tables and went to the current system. And again, we had other chemical issues at the same time that led us to go the route that we have here. But again, with the continuing issues with food temperatures, steam tables is the best option.
So Scott, do any of your other facilities have used steam tables now?
Oh yes, they all have steam tables, so, but they're...
And so you know the configurations at those facilities, right?
Right, so for example, at
you've got some models we can take a look at and see, yeah, see how close we can come to those.
Yeah, I think conceptually we know what needs to be done. It's just a matter of being able to cost out the changes that we need to do in the kitchen that's necessary.
And then see what equipment we might be able to trade in to restaurant supply, you know, so we aren't incurring a lot of cost. We still know we need to provide warmed pellets and plates to stay bactery, so we would need some carts. We believe we need our pellets. I mean, they could be separated, one to each side of the building. We wouldn't need near as many trays or domes or pellets that we have now to serve all the population.
So in summary, sort of got a problem with just what you said, hot food being hot, cold food being cold, but particularly hot food being hot. Tried something different when we took the steam tables out for other reasons, listening to all the concerns being raised, trying to figure out how we can effectively bring them back in a safe way so that we don't aren't making ourselves at putting any residents at risk or putting ourselves at risk for any violations from public health's perspective, but obviously needing to address the issue of hot food. So,
what do you think your time frame on getting this kind of figured out is going to be?
It's hard to say. It's going to depend on the amount of work that needs to be done. So we got to get into the conceptual stage of, we have to see if either healthcare services group is going to be able to help us.
What about a target date for when you would have a decision?
To move forward with it?
Uh-huh.
I'd say, let's see, April?
April 1st for a decision, and then the homework.
Next meeting, yeah,
yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Okay. Well, actually,
what's your, I know you can't tell me the cost, I'm sorry. What's the cost for the steam table? Let alone the adjustments and the maintenance setup.
The stationary aren't that expensive. I mean, a couple thousand dollars.
Okay, thank you.
Which we think that would be the ideal,
sure,
for that area. We would need to move it or...
And we would like to actually replace those ice machines. They're original equipment and they're large, they're a lot of space, and we could probably use small units that might save up space. So again, we want to take a look. If we're going to do it, we want to do it right. Within the financial, reasonable financial investment.
Do you think are you saying by April 1st you come back with a recommendation or by the next board meeting? Should we give it to April 1st?
No, by the April.
The April board meeting,
yeah,
or the March board meeting?
April.
He said April.
Okay, he said April 1st and then he said by the next board meeting.
Oh, did I?
March.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm just trying to confirm. So by the April board meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That'll be good.
We have gotten some consistency on times, being fully staffed. So we do have some things that are going better. Currently, the dietary staff does do test trays. There are test trays sent out on each cart that they check temperatures. So the question was asked. So we should be able to come back with that information.
Covered. You want to talk about the Medicare unit? So the issue was programming and you're saying no.
I would just encourage you guys, if you can, because we started again with one, you know, this food issue, it keeps coming up, and it's obviously pretty important. We started working on this at the last board meeting, and so you guys have been, I'm assuming, working through this. If you can problem solve this sooner, I just think it's, I would encourage you to put a little bit, you know, quicker emergency kind of planning as much as we can to get it done. It's been a month since we
Unfortunately, it'll require us to do some, IDPH is going to have to sign off on the plan. And sure. So there is going to be, the sooner we can get it done, the sooner we can get it through the appropriate.
Well, I think I hear you, don't let me put words in your mouth. We're not saying when necessarily would it even be done, but sort of just what's the plan? And I think you're saying could you be bringing back a plan by next board meeting, not realizing that the plan would be contingent upon what IDPH has to approve. So you got to put together some kind of plan you can take to IDPH, and then understanding right. that it might get changed based on what they say. Is that possible?
If we have that information solidified by the next meeting, we will definitely do it. But what I can say is this is a very high priority to address. So we're going to move this as quickly as possible.
I have a question relative to the new unit. The people on that unit are not as much of a risk for accidentally burning themselves. Could you put a steam table somewhere on that unit and just move them over there, and then that would create more room in the second dining, you know, that second dining room that you closed off that was to be dedicated for the new unit? Could you free up space there by moving, you know, taking a portable steam table to the new directly to the new unit and creating a small dining area over there?
Even though our steam tables are portable, they can't leave the kitchen. They're too big to fit through the kitchen doors.
But they were originally in the dining room.
We had to take them apart, right. We would have to do, I mean, they would still have to be enclosed. They would have to be manned while they were on, which...
Even though you don't have any dementia problems or
right,
no
exactly.
confusion problems at all.
Right. Same things apply.
Yeah, they would still, IDPH would still view it as a potential
because
risk.
Because someone could be, you
walk
know, come over
the,
there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So five, the Medicare admissions continue. We're about half full on that. We seem to fluctuate about 11 there in that area. We've had a lot of positive feedback. I know I met with one of our ladies that discharged on Saturday, and she just wanted to tell me that everybody had exceeded her expectations. She read the news, heard the information, but she said if I ever needed anyone to comment on a stay, she would be glad to do that. She felt like we far outweighed her expectations, so that was good to hear. We talked about the medical management, the contract management. We're about to get that solidified.
For the cardiopulmonary.
Yeah, with Dr. Sheik.
And I think one of the other things that I've been talking with Josh, our admissions director, is that to start putting on his calendar regular visits to some of the assisted living facilities that don't normally send us a lot of referrals, and just to hit them periodically once a month, and just a friendly reminder that we're here, and also with the Medicare unit, just keep them informed that we've got this new Medicare unit. I mean, they would typically be a direct referral source for the unit, but if their residents are aware and they end up going to the hospital, then it becomes a potential referral. Again, the feedback that we've heard from select some of the discharge planners is that they are very aware of the Medicare unit, and it seems to be that the word's getting out, and you know, some of the feedback they're getting from families is that Champaign County is number one on their list because of the availability of these private rooms. So we just have to keep pushing that story out there as much as we can.
And you've been distributing those brochures you showed us? Mm-hmm. I mean, it would seem to me that waiting rooms for rehab doctors, or, you know, or rehab surgeons would be the primary place you want to send them.
Any questions for Karen on the issues and the staffing quality food service programming as the mandatory report? Okay, so just a brief overview on the financials.
Yeah, so on page 39, so take a look at our admission and discharge. So the census has been, you know, we've basically been going between anywhere from 170 to 175 over the last few months, and we haven't been able to get it up over 180 or higher. But over the last, well, out of the last 3 or 4 months, October, December, and January, you know, we've seen our Medicare admissions get back to levels that we haven't seen since, you know, before April of 2015. November we were down to 6, but between October, again, the months of October, December, and January, we were in double digits in terms of Medicare admits. And again, that's traditional Medicare, Medicare Advantage, and
United Healthcare,
yeah, replacement or plans. But our non-Medicare admits, you know, have been, I would call, stagnant over the last, you know, for a while now. And if you can see, you know, back in January, you know, was a month where we had 17, and that was some of an aberration, but that kind of precipitated my discussions with Josh about, you know, making a regular visits to the assisted livings to see if we can generate more referrals from some of those facilities, again, that don't normally, or that we don't see a lot of referrals to. But clearly the trend is that with these Medicare admits that we're seeing, a high percentage of those are being discharged home. So if you take a look at our discharges, you know, they've also been, you know, 10 or higher. And so if we could get a month, you know, a couple of months in a row where our discharges, you know, decrease and we're turning these admissions to long-term care admissions or long-term residents, then we will start seeing our census go up. But so, and again, you know, the work that we're doing with Dr. Sheik and the cardiopulmonary programs to make us more attractive for hospital admissions, and working on these clinical protocols because we need to be more efficient in how we're taking care of these residents. So all these things that we're working on are, again, are trying to get our admissions up. But again, you know, the good thing is we're sending a lot of people home. The bad thing is we're sending a lot of people home at the same time, so.
That is the industry now that's
correct.
Gonna happen.
So, you know, we can't fight it. We have to do our best to keep patients going in, but.
We go over the page 42 of the financials.
Yeah, so for the month of December, we did show a net profit of $17,000, cash gain of $89,000. And so for year to date, or for the 12-month period, we had a positive net income of just under $30,000, and our cash, positive cash flow for the year is $751,584. So right now, again, we are still receiving regular Medicaid payments, and I'm glad I'm being a broken record there. But again, you know, the story has not changed from last month or previous months. It's just that at some point we will be seeing a payment delay. It just hasn't happened yet. Go ahead. I mean, not
no,
go ahead,
no,
but yes.
Yeah.
So the county board did approve the issuance of the revenue anticipation notes. So again, in the week of the 21st, Gary Winchell, my director of fiscal services at MPA, is going to be coming up, and him and the county treasurer will start talking to some of the local banks. And what, again, so what we're going to do is to determine if there are any banks or lending institutions that will be interested in buying these revenue anticipation notes. And again, our hope is that we're going to get a bunch of banks and lending institutions who are interested in. And so if that's the case, then we'll put the RANs on the back burner until we need them, which is when there's a payment delay. We will have to wait at least 2, if not 3 months before we issue our first RAN, because we'll be issuing them in 2-month increments. So, and then the county treasurer would issue a request for proposal that we would send out to all of the interested lending institutions besides publicly advertising it. And then hopefully we will get multiple bids for the revenue anticipation notes. And again, if we have multiple bids, that will help keep the interest rates low. But the approved RAN assumes the maximum interest rate of 5%. So hopefully, again, that's just a educated guess on where we think the interest rates are going to be, but we hope it's going to be less than that. But again, very simplistic, this is the way for the county or for the national to get a line of credit for the Medicaid receivables. And these RANs will not be backed by the county. It will be backed solely on the receivables from Medicaid. And we are still working to see if we can actually, to date, we have not found any of my contacts who can provide an actual statute or regulation that says once a Medicaid services has been rendered and we have a prepayment report, that the state of Illinois can't decide to say we're not going to pay you that or to reduce that payment by whatever percent. Because the banks would love to get some assurances that that receivable is 100% good, even though we can say it is because it's backed by the state and the feds. They would like to see something on paper. So we're still, and I'm trying to find a needle in the haystack, and I've talked with HFS directly, talked with our consultants through nursing home organizations, but I'm still looking to try to find it. It's got to be somewhere, but it's probably on page 1 million out of 1 million pages of the state plan amendment.
So what's the timeline for us trying to issue?
It's all
with the bank.
We're going to start later this month, and then we're just going to keep hitting these new lending institutions. We've already actually talked with a bank based in St. Louis that we at MPA have talked with, and they're interested, and they're asking all the right questions. And so we're just going to continue to hopefully put our list together of interested lending institutions. So the more the merrier. So we're going to go local and statewide, and also in the St. Louis market as far as we can go. So. So I'll keep you posted.
Okay. Other business? Okay. Anything else? Okay. Next meeting is March 14th. 6 o'clock. Do we have a motion?
I move for adjournment.